Hello and welcome to the Hopkins Biotech Podcast. Today, we're excited to debut our newest segment called Clubs, where we share conversations that are crowdsourced by the clubs and initiatives here at Johns Hopkins. If you're interested in sharing a conversation on our platform as part of this club segment, please feel free to contact us at hopkinsbiotechpodcast@gmail.com. In this first episode, we're pleased to share a fireside management chat conducted by Iqbal Chaudhry, Director of Education at the Johns Hopkins Graduate Consulting Club. Enjoy the episode.
Okay, so welcome everyone. I hope you're doing well. My name is Iqbal Chaudhry, and I'm absolutely thrilled to have you all here with us today. So today is the sixth installment of Fireside Management Chats. And for those who are new, this is an event that we organize twice a month where we invite speakers from both academia and industry to talk or chat with us about various aspects of management consulting. And today's event is special because we have four speakers instead of one. All of them are from Bain. And I just named them and they will go through their introduction when they start speaking. So today we have with us Jackie Flanagan, who is an associate partner with Bain, Nick Hoffman and Amir Niyaki, who are consultants in the DC area, and Bobby Lambros, who is a recruiting manager. So this will be a 1 hour long session with which will contain a case study, information about Bain and question and answer at the end. So just two quick housekeeping rules. One is that keep yourself muted at all point in time. You can turn on your video, of course. And then you can type in all your questions in the chat box and I'll read them to the speakers at the end of the presentation. All right, over to you, Bobby. I guess you can take it away.
Okay, yeah, actually Jackie's gonna kick us off.
Yeah, wonderful. I just wanted to say hi and welcome everyone from Hopkins to our Cracking the Case at Bain session. I sat in so many of your shoes way back when, 2013, 2014, when I was finishing up a PhD at Hopkins and wanting to know what this thing called consulting was. So a huge welcome. Hopkins is near and dear to my heart. I'll give a little bit of an intro and then I'm going to turn it over to Amir, Nick, and Bobby who will lead you through.
Okay, sorry, there we go. A little delayed on my advancing of the slides.
So as folks mentioned, I'm an associate partner in our Washington, D.C. office, which means I've been at Bain for almost 6 years now. Time has flown. I've been in our D.C. office the entire time, although my teams have been from all across North America. So I've had the delight of really getting to know our full set of offices. I did my PhD at Hopkins in biophysics, but I was part of the BCMB program. So if there's any BCMB students out there or folks in the biophysics department, a maybe extra special warm welcome. I did my PhD with Dan Leahy. He actually left Hopkins soon after I graduated and went to UT Austin and is doing some really cool work down there with Jason McClellan and others. So outside of my history as a biophysicist, I live in DC with my husband and lots of houseplants that you can see here. I've had a really awesome path at Bain. I mean, it's been far more than I ever imagined. I was a consultant like Amir and Nick. I was promoted to manager in 2018, which is when I then also started to specialize in healthcare. And boy, has it been a fun few years, and especially last year. I have done work in so many different types of clinical trial spaces, both strategy for them and accelerating them. I have done work on COVID testing and all sorts of stuff. So a really dynamic time to be at Bain, working with our clients on their truly most important problems. Outside of Bain, I am still a very proud science geek. You'd be very happy to see that my computer monitor is on top of my textbooks and I have a periodic table at my desk. I spend a lot of time at the beaches. One of those pictures is New Jersey. One of those pictures is an island at the Caribbean. I bet you can't tell the difference, but I love any good beach and spending time with my family. But most importantly, I just want to welcome you all and say We are very passionate about the path from Hopkins to consulting, and especially at Bain. We're here to help you in your journey, whatever stage you are in. And if you've never thought of a case before, that's okay. I think I went into my first interview not really knowing what a case was. So you are well ahead of the game, and I think this will be a very helpful discussion. So Bobby, unless there's anything else, I'll turn it over to you all to get to the good stuff.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Jackie. So we're going to transition really quickly, and we're going to introduce the rest of us as well that are going to be on the session for you today. Nick and Amir are doing most of the heavy lifting today, but I'm here as a support and as the go-to person if you have recruiting questions. But I'll turn it over to Nick to start us off with intros.
Yeah, hi, everyone. Super excited to be here. I think I know quite a lot of you, and it's great to see you all again. I transitioned to Bain in September. From Hopkins, I was a postdoc in Cynthia Wolberger's lab. And yeah, I've had a great time so far, and I'm super excited to be back and to do this workshop today. I work in private equity at the moment. I've started there since I've been at Bain. And my passions are eating. I admit it, I'm guilty. I'm a sweet tooth. Travel, skiing, you know, hanging out with the family, these kind of things. So super excited to be here, and yeah, passing it over to Amir.
Great. My name is Amir. I joined Bain in October, and before that, I was a PhD student in the Homewood campus with Dr. Suom Young in the biophysics / the biology department. And yeah, it's when I received the invitation, I was like super happy to come back and talk to some of you. And like, I just went through the list and I recognized a lot of those names. I was like, yeah, it'll be nice to see some friendly faces and talk to them about this path. Currently, I'm working on a pre-M&A sector screen for a medtech company. And this week is the last week of the project, and I had the honor to work with Jackie as well. She's our associate partner on the case. So it's been fun. And overall, I just like anything outdoorsy, camping, hiking. It just recently, by recently, I meant in the summer. Went on a 1 month long road trip before starting my job. It was like COVID restricted, but still it worth the try. And yeah, that's pretty much it. I'll pass it to Bobby.
Awesome. Hi, everyone. My name is Bobby Lambros. I like introduced before, I'm a manager based in our Chicago office, but I help to facilitate all the recruiting across all of our North American offices, specifically for advanced degree candidates. So really excited to be here with you all today. Since Nick and Amir shared what they're currently working on, I'm currently working on our Advantage internship program. If you don't know what that is, I hope at least by the end of this call, you will know what Advantage is and how to apply. And it's the best, I really think it's one of the best opportunities that Bain provides. Both Nick and Amir went through the program before joining Bain. So happy to talk more about that later, and we will. But aside from that, I've spent most of my time in the Chicago office. I joined in 2015. I did do a quick transfer to the Los Angeles office earlier this year, but COVID got in the way of that experience, got in the way of many things this year. But I did got to spend some time in LA and in the Southern California area, and am grateful for that. So. But back to the cold weather here, and back affiliated with Chicago. That's it. So we're gonna get started. We've got a lot to cover today, so I'll turn it over to Amir. I believe he's gonna start us off with kind of like a general overview of Bain, and then we'll get into the nitty gritty of the case interview process.
Yeah, sounds good. Let's just get started. I will assume like we have folks here that are familiar at different levels with consulting and essentially Bain. The consulting industry, it's a very large industry, and it's been growing a lot since over the past decade. But the key is that not all consultants or consulting firms do the same things. Here from the top down, you see the strategy consulting firms that Bain lands in alongside McKinsey, BCG, I'm sure you guys are familiar with, but there are other firms that do, for instance, IT specialty firms that offer IT solutions to their clients, or accounting firms like EY, PwC, that offer accounting services to their clients. In case of Bain and in general for the business, for the strategy consulting, the firm basically focuses on broad general management issues and corporate, like corporate strategy, business unit strategies, and similar solutions. In doing that, the fun part is that we touch many different parts of an organization, for instance, from the sales and marketing to manufacturing to distribution, et cetera, et cetera. As you can see, the scope is very broad. If you go to the next slide, here you can see a wide range of different questions that we answer. So essentially, we target and address the most important questions our clients have, which you can see it ranges. It could range from pharmaceuticals to auto industry to like environmental solutions. Just to give you an example, my first case at Bain, I did an e-commerce strategy development for a consumer good company, a large consumer good company. And my second case, which I'm currently finishing, it's on an M&A sector scan for a healthcare and medtech company. So irrespective of what you do or what your background is, you will be staffed on, as an incoming consultant, you will be staffed on very different projects. And that's essentially the fun part of this job, that you get to know, you get to learn about random industries that you never thought about and random capabilities that you never imagined it would be so cool. But if we go to the next slide, as I mentioned earlier, we do focus on strategy mostly, but outside of that, we do work on different variety of capabilities as well, like performance improvement, from organizational restructuring, private equity that Nick works on. And all of these capabilities translates across various industries, from consumer good to advanced manufacturing, energy, healthcare, you name it. And within that, digital is a very key component to this. Digital is very pervasive in our everyday aspect of our work. And we have this suite called Vector, which is our digital delivery capability. And on your daily basis, depending on the need of the case, the need of the industry and availability of the team and the structure of your team, these digital solutions will be incorporated in our team. These are not separate entities and that operate independent from one another. We have an integrated approach that all of these capabilities like Vector, like Forward and other like advanced analytics, all of these tools that we have at our disposal gets integrated with our case teams. Just another example, in my previous case, it was a new way of working that we defined here at Bain. We had our general practice team, which is general consultants, ACs, et cetera, and we work alongside our Forward, which is our digital marketing arm, Adapt, which is our design arm. All of them, we work on the same case, and we had regular meetings, and it was honestly the most fun case I had so far. It was great seeing all of those interactions. But if we move forward, this was a quick introduction. I know most of you are familiar with Bain. That's why you're here. But to get in a little bit more into the nitty-gritty detail of it, let's just talk about the interview process. Predominantly, no matter which office you're going to interview for, they're going to interview, we're going to have two different versions of interview, a case interview and an experience interview. The objectives are very clear. For the case interview, we want to evaluate your ability to doing the job. And then the experience interview, we just mainly want to test your consultant skills, your personal experience. We just want to understand you better and essentially answer your questions as well. In order to do so, each of them, we have different assessment criterias or things that we look for. For the case, we just want to understand, how do you frame a question? Do you have a good business judgment? How are your qualitative skills? And et cetera, et cetera. But for the experience interview, we are most interested in understanding, why are you interested in Bain? Why Bain to begin with? We want to know you better. What is your passion? What is your interest outside of work? We mostly are interested in people who are multidimensional. We want to know, what do you do outside of work? And more logistically, for the case interview, for the first round, we normally have two case interviews. And for the second round, we have two case interviews and the experience interview, which would be, if I'm not mistaken, like a 45-minute fit interview, where you just talk about your past experiences, and then it's more conversational. It's less like, oh, tell me about a time that you did blah, blah. It's more conversational, and you talk with your interviewer about your experiences, about your resume, et cetera, et cetera. If we go to the next slide. So I guess the question here would be, what do we evaluate candidates based on? I think it's a question on everyone's mind. You can think of it as two major buckets. One, your problem-solving skills, and two, your client readiness, and are you a team player? For the first part, we want to know, how do you structure a problem? When you're given a complex question, how can you logically create a framework and drive the conversation? How do you do your analyses? Meaning that, can you create a hypothesis, match your framework to it, and run with it? Driving the discussion, you'll be given some data that you need to do calculations with. Can you drive the conversation, find the appropriate data, and do the appropriate calculations, and then draw conclusions and get to a recommendation based on that? And lastly, which is very important, is your business judgment. Can you, based on all of these information you have, can you make a logical recommendation? And more importantly, can you understand the business sensitivity or put yourself in the shoes of a client? This is very critical because every answer needs to be tailored. No matter what the conclusion is, it needs to be tailored to your client. And you have to understand, sometimes some recommendations are not really well taken by the client, and you have to understand their point of view and their sensitivity. You can't just give them the recommendation. You need to tailor it to fit their needs. And on the more soft skill part, we are interested in people who are coachable. What I mean by coachable is, for example, in your interview, your interviewer gives and nudges you in a different direction. Do you get the hint and run with it, or you're stubborn and you just want to go on your way? Which is great. If you have a direction, it's amazing. But sometimes you need to understand that you might need to change direction in an interview setting. But overall, coachability is like, all of us, especially ADs, we come from a very different background, which we don't know much about the business world. Some people do know more, some people do know less. I didn't know much. So being open to learn and be coached is fundamental and key. And lastly, you just have to become conversational. During your interview, you will have some time to talk with your interview. And it's always a two-way highway. Like, you have to enjoy conversing with the person, and the person has to enjoy it and have an engaged conversation. So that's very important as well. So if we look more tactically, your interview normally lasts, each interview normally lasts around 40 minutes. The first 5 minutes, you'll have an introduction, like, tell me about yourself type of questions. And then immediately you just jump right into the case study for about 20 to 25 minutes. And at the end, you have time to ask your questions. If you have any questions about the company, about, I don't know, whatever it's on your mind, you can ask the interviewer. And then at the end, you'll have some time to transition between your two interviews. So as Bain works in different industry and different capabilities, normally what we do for case interviews, we don't use any of these case books or like things that you find outside. We develop our own cases, and they're based on real cases that we have worked on. So what you would expect would be all the topic of those cases and the capabilities they address would vary in terms of industry, from healthcare, could be a healthcare case, retail case. It doesn't matter what your background is. This could be very different. And then in terms of capability, we might ask you about the cost structure of a company, like how to efficiently reduce costs. Or more on a corporate strategy level, we might ask like, oh, we have this opportunity. Can you assess the growth opportunities, or can we enter or have a 10-year plan to grow? What should we do? So you should expect a variety of case topics. So when you're practicing, try to diversify. Don't practice a particular industry. Don't focus on a particular industry or a particular case type. The next slide. But irrespective of that, we mainly look for two type of answers here. One, either like a decision between two or three distinct answers. For instance, the case wants to launch a product, A, B, C. What should we do? Which one should we do first? Then let's just plan and make a strategy for that. Or we want the best right answer. The reason I like this phrase, the best right answer, is that there is no one answer. You could have multiple right answers to a question, because it's not pure math that, okay, you prove this is the best and right answer for it. There might be multiple right answers, and this ties back to the business judgment and the sensitivity part. Which one of these are the best answer for our client given all the information we have? So this is so understanding this, it can give you a perspective when you practice. Keep these two in mind as well. Oh. Is there any question?
Sorry, Amir, it's like really delayed. So I'm trying to give you the slides when you need.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
Apologies. Oh, shoot. No, hold on. We got to go back, don't we?
Yeah.
Here we go.
No, you're absolutely doing amazing. So far we talked about the case, like in a more general term, but when you're given a case, what should you do? What would be your strategy to crack a case? And you can practice this in your case practice with your teammates or your friends. So most importantly, you have to structure the problem. What does that mean? Is that number one, you have to understand the situation. If there is something unclear, ask clarifying question. Don't be afraid of asking questions from your interviewer. It's critical to understand what you're solving for. Otherwise, you just like solve for a totally different thing and your case would be bombed. And then next, when you get to the solving the problem, you had time to create a framework of a plan of action, how to attack and solve this problem. Now you have to go through with that. You have to develop a hypothesis. You break down this complicated question into smaller chunks that you can solve for and then put them all together at the end. Sharing assumptions with your interviewer. If you make any assumptions throughout your calculation, share it with your interviewer. Make it a dialogue. Don't go on a monologue. It's very important to talk and communicate with your interviewer. For each of your buckets, try to identify and understand what's the main driver of this problem, and then tackle that first to save time and be more efficient in it. And then later on, you'll get data. You have to ask the right question to get the right data. And then you can you can use your analytical skills to draw conclusions from each of those data pieces and then tie it back to your framework. And again, be open to coaching. Sometimes you want to go in a certain direction, but the interviewer has a different direction in mind and they have available data for it. So be on a look for hints, take it and run with it. And lastly, when you get to the end of your case, you want to make a recommendation. You have to get to an answer proactively. You drive the conversation. Now you have multiple floating pieces of data and mini conclusions. You have to put them all together and create a coherent answer. And then lastly, you just don't summarize all of your findings, because the recommendation needs to be action oriented. And the answer would be, so now we have all of these information, what should we do? And then within that recommendation, you need to show that you understand the business sensitivity, and make business judgments. So I think next, I hope this was like, I know some of you might know it and it was a little bit quick, but I hope this gives some clarity on how to approach a case. So why don't we just go ahead and practice some of this, and Nick will walk you through an actual sample case.
Yeah, thanks a lot. That sounds great. Thanks for the great overview, Amir.
Yes, so I hope I was in time. I was tracking time.
Excellent. Yeah, we'll manage. So it was great. Let's look in a real case. So the case is called Tasty Treats. It's a bit shortened from the actual Tasty Treats case to fit in the time frame. But basically, this is reflective of the prompt. Situation: Tasty Treats is a $10 billion food and beverage company that's considering acquiring a smaller competitor. And the target is called Snacktastic, a $2 billion food and beverage company. The complication is that both companies are present in all major channels throughout the US. After some conversations, the purchase price has been agreed to be at a premium, and the board of Tasty Treats will only approve the transaction if the team manages to identify synergies worth $150 million in the near term. Great. So now's a good time to ask some questions and clarify some things. In the interview, you can ask whatever's on your mind. A good question, if I would do this case, might be, what do we define as a quick win synergy? Because I'm not totally clear on where you want to go with that. So just to update on that, quick win synergies. What we mean by that is efforts to boost earnings and, quickly while long-term strategies are being designed, and important that the achievements do not diminish long-term profits. What it's not is a big, corporate strategy or short-term profits at the expense of long-term profits. So I think after asking this question, I have a better idea now where this case is going to go. I have to try to find quick win synergies in this acquisition, but don't go too long and don't think of a huge strategy, because that's not the scope of this case and of this question. All right. So now is a good time to structure the problem. And Amir walked through the different parts of the case already. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time discussing this. But what we could do is think of a good structure that we could use. Why don't we take a minute? Everybody can do this in their head or write it down. Just think of 2 to 3 very general buckets. No need to make any sub points, just very generally, what could be good to look at to identify quick win synergies for the takeover of Snacktastic by Tasty Treats. Let's think for a minute, just very general, what could be useful to look at here.
And Nick, can we maybe have students put some of their thoughts into the chat?
That's a great idea.
All right, so
when you come up with something, just put it in the chat right now. When the minute's over, I'm going to continue the case, but feel free to post throughout, and I'm happy to discuss that with all of you, and we can all discuss it in the Q&A session after the case. Let me also say there's no right or wrong, right? I mean, there's a lot of things you can look at, but I think there are some areas that make more sense versus other areas that don't make so much sense. And that's what we're trying to figure out. What's probably the most realistic or the best area to look at first? Okay, so let's look at one example. I see revenue expenses is a really good idea. So let's look at 3 example buckets that we could look at. I think looking at this framework, there's 3 potential, areas we could look at. One is revenue, the other one is cost management, and the third is optimizing the supply chain. When you walk through a tree like that, it's good to name the buckets first and then go a little bit more into detail and discuss why you think this is important. And if we go to the next slide, I can also talk about why this makes sense, because what you want to do then is solve the problem and develop a hypothesis. So, and to do that, it's also good to argue already with your, you know, first case tree, why you think this is a good idea to look at and why it's a good idea to dive directly into that. So let's go back to the slide, to the next slide, sorry, forward, and say, okay, you know, I have these three buckets that I think are important. And my current hypothesis is that, you know, I believe that probably in order to achieve $150 million in quick win synergies, there's probably some cost management that we can do. And what I think we can do is look at fixed costs and variable costs. And I've broken this down here in SG&A and operations and maybe some capital costs as well. So that's where I want to start. And now you can take the opportunity and drive the case and say something like, do we have any information on that? I mean, do we have some data? And then if we move to the next slide, oh yeah, so we actually do have some data there. So if that happens in the case, that's always great. So you were on the right track. But you know, sometimes you suggest revenue, which is a good call as well. Actually, this case is shortened. There is revenue data. We're not going to talk about it now because we have to shorten it up. But there's also revenue data to look at. So it's always good to come up with an idea what you want to look at next, even if you're not totally sure. Okay, so here's a good overview. This is actually very helpful. So what we see is that sales at Tasty Treats have been, you know, $10 billion, and at Snacktastic, $2 billion. And I think all of the buckets below that are cost buckets, actually. So I'm real time walking through this figure. And that's really interesting. So we see all the different costs listed up. What this now directly come to why this can be useful for you to answer your objective, which is, you know, does this acquisition make sense? We need to find 150 million in synergies. So let's look at this quickly. What I see right away is that, you know, the sales of Tasty Treats is 5 times higher than that of Snacktastic. So in order to have a quick overview of the cost position of both companies, right, the ratio should be 5 to 1. Because the sales ratio is 5 to 1. And let's just look through the list, right? Marketing, 3 billion, and Snacktastic, 600 million. That's 5 to 1, fantastic. Okay, and then you walk through the list and you realize that at packaging, that's actually not the case. The packaging costs of Snacktastic seem to be much higher compared to Tasty Treats. So it's 13% of total sales at Tasty Treats, and 20% of total sales at Snacktastic. And looking at raw ingredients and overhead, it's the same there. So that was pretty useful, actually. So just by looking at this, I can say, you know, maybe we can look and find some synergies in these three areas, packaging, raw ingredients, and overhead. So yeah, now do we have more data on that? Yeah, actually, turns out we do. Oh, great. So then you get a figure like this, right? So what are you going to do now? My advice is when you get a big figure, get to the point really fast, right? Because the case is short and you have to try to move on and find like the key, basically insight quick from a figure instead of talking about what you see for like 2 minutes, because that's a lot of time that you don't have. Then later in the case. So I would start discussing this figure somehow like this. Okay, so here's a breakdown of the costs at the two companies. It's really helpful because what I see right away is that although, you know, the ratios are different, there's a lot of synergies actually. So looking at packaging, right? Tasty Treats and Snacktastic, both I think they use the same packages, bottles and cardboard. What about other, it's a good question, right? What about other, the interviewer will give you a hint here and say, you know, honestly, other, we can't look at that right now. Let's focus on, let's take other out. Okay, great. So that's good. So let's go to ingredients. Same here, right? It looks as if overall, although the cost ratio versus total sales is different, the ingredients look pretty much similar. Corn and sweetener is the same. That's good. Wheat, corn, that's something that Snacktastic is doing different. I don't know if it makes sense to look there, right? Maybe they have a different recipe. This is like business judgment, right? Maybe we shouldn't look there, but what do you think, interviewer? That's a good question to ask, right? But actually looking at overheads, there I definitely see an interesting difference, right? Not only are the costs in general higher for overheads at Snacktastic, but here there's also a difference in a corporate function versus business unit personnel. For whatever reason, the corporate function's costs are a much larger percentage of the total overhead costs at Snacktastic. So that's definitely something I want to look into more. Great. So let's move on. All right. So the key insights that I got just from looking at these things, and it's good to name them at this stage, right, are, Snacktastic spends more on packaging ingredients than Tasty Treats does. Post-merger, you know, maybe we can do something with corporate costs. There seem to be a little bit high at Snacktastic, and we can take advantage of whatever Tasty Treats does and apply that to Snacktastic. And third, right, by developing practice policies and procedures, maybe we can, in general, do something about the cost structure. I think those are the buckets I would look at: bottles, cardboard, corn sweetener, and corporate overhead, and tie it back to the key objective, right, which is to identify if we can find quick win synergies to save $150 million quickly and you know, approve this deal. Cool. So yeah, now we have a pretty good idea, right? We have a good idea where this can go. So it's always good to do some math and prove, you know, that this really makes sense, right? You can talk a lot, but if you can demonstrate with some numbers that it's working, that's much better. So I wanted to ask, do you guys think we already have all the numbers available to do math, or would you ask for more in this case, right? Maybe just think about it a little bit. Looking at the data we already had, those two figures basically, the truth is that actually everything is in there that you need. So you could use this already now to calculate all these values. And I'm gonna show you how, and this is also really typical in a Bain case, because it's gonna simulate how it's in real life, right? You don't get perfect data, you get whatever you have, and then you have to use that. All right, so if you do math, what's always good is to, you know, give an overview what you're gonna do. Instead of just starting to calculate something, involve the interview and say, okay, I think I can do some math now and try to see if we can save 150 million. Because what I wanna do is look at bottles, cardboard, corn sweetener, and, you know, corporate, take the spend that we have at Tasty Treats and Snacktastic. But I think I'm gonna focus on Snacktastic, right? Because it's higher there compared to Tasty Treats. Identify how much higher it is and assume that we can reduce that to the level at Tasty Treats based on total sales. And that should give us the cost savings that we can have. And then we sum it all up and see, you know, if it's enough or if not, and if this makes sense. Does that sound good? Yeah, let's do it. So, okay, so let's look at it, right? Let's look at packaging costs. So we know that the total sales of Tasty Treats is $10 billion. And we see that packaging costs in total at Tasty Treats is $1.3 billion. That's 13%, right? And looking at Snacktastic, it's 400 million of 2 billion, which is, how much is that? 20%, right? Okay, so why don't we break it down a little more? So 13%, right, on the left-hand side, and we have this graph. So this altogether is 13% on the left-hand side, Tasty Treats. Okay, so now you can make an estimate, right? Looking at this, bottles is around half of that total, right? Maybe a little bit less. So let's just say it's 6. If you're off, the interviewer will say, if you say, oh, I think it's 8, and you say, why don't you take 6, you know? And that's good, right? So cool, thank you. Okay, yeah, then I'll take 6. And I think the other 7% to get to the 13 is cardboard and other together. But I think cardboard is a little bit more. Let's take 4% of total sales is the cost for cardboard. And others 3, so that together makes 13% of the total sales. Okay, and let's do the same for Snacktastic, right? It's 400 million of 2 billion, that's 20%. And looking at this, now breaking this up, bottles is probably half, right, of the total cost here. So let's give 10 to bottles, 5 to cardboard. Okay, and now let's compare the two, right? Okay, that's really helpful. Bottles is 10% in Snacktastic of total sales, and it's 6% in Tasty Treats of total sales. So if we would assume that we could reduce that cost from 10% to 6%, that's a reduction opportunity of 40%. And the total sales in Snacktastic is 2 billion, right? So 10% of 2 billion is 200 million. So that's actually the real bottle cost at Snacktastic right now. So we have the total, the real cost of bottles, and we have the reduction opportunity, which is what we laid out before. That's all we need. And the same we can do for cardboard. And if we move forward to the other cost items, which is here, you know, ingredients, we can do the same for corn sweetener, the same exercise, right? Comparing the cost to total sales. And if we do that, we do again, we look at the bar and try to kind of, you know, put the percentages in. It's around 4% in Snacktastic, 3% in Tasty Treats. So that's a reduction by 25%. That's cool. And we also said that I don't think we should do that for wheat, corn, right? Because I don't know if maybe they have a different snack or they have a different recipe. I don't think it's easily applicable to use potatoes there or to, you know, to purchase together or somehow save costs there. So I don't think we should look at that right now. If that assumption is off, the interviewer will say, you know what, let's just do it anyway. Okay, let's do it. But that's fair, right? You just made a business judgment guess here, thinking that maybe it's not a good idea to do this right now. Okay, let's move on. So we have the reduction opportunity here. And if we move on, right, we can do the same exercise for corporate costs. However, actually, I just got a cue from the interviewer. She said that actually Tasty Treats told us, the management, they think they can take almost all the costs over. Oh, great. Thanks for that hint. Now we're going to use that hint. Yeah. So that's a good hint. So let's assume that almost all the costs are going to be, you know, handled by Tasty Treats, and we can cross these off at Snacktastic. So let's do that. Okay, and let's move to the next page. So yeah, let's just fill all of this out. And now when you do that and you do real-time math, you can really talk about it. Like, over-communication is always better than doing it in your head and not saying anything. Huh? So I'm just gonna run through one of those. Okay, so the current spend at Snacktastic for bottles is 200 million, right? We identified a reduction opportunity of 40%. Let's see, 200 million, 40%. So 10% of 200 million is 20 million times 4 gets us to 40%. That's 80 million. So that's 80 million savings already here. That's already half of what we need of the 150, right? Amazing. Let's move on. Same thing for cardboard, 100 million, 20%. That's easy. That's 20 million. Great. Corn sweetener, 80 million, 25% of 80. That's a fourth of 80. That's 20 million, right? Okay, fantastic. And corporate functions, so we said we can eliminate almost all. Is 80% reasonable or 100%? The interviewer would say, well, you know, 80% is reasonable. Okay, let's use that, right? 80%. So that's not now a super easy one. So 60 million, what's 80% of that? I would do the same as before. You know, 10% of 60 million is 6 million. Times 8, that's 48, right? Yeah, okay. So we have all the numbers. Let's add it all up. 80 plus 20 is 100, plus 20, 120, plus 40, 168. Wow. Now, when you finish up a math section with such a number, what does it mean, right? So you have to say immediately something. What does it mean? So something like, for instance, this. 168, oh, wow. That's actually already more than... that more than the quick synergies that we were aiming for, which was only 150 million. So just, you know, just by doing this, I think we already show that this is an interesting deal, and this can already actually now lead to the recommendation. So let's move on and just look at that, right? So since the case was shortened, we basically finished our assessment of the initial tree that we drew out. But if you would have to look for more things, you can go back to this tree and look at other issues, right? Don't forget this tree that you did in the beginning of the case. It's often useful. All right, let's move into recommendation. So when you recommend a solution, right, take all the answers, recommend something practical, and make sure you demonstrate the business sensitivities. And if we go to the next page, you can see an example recommendation. Amir, I wanted to ask you, what do you think? Should the client do this?
May I have a moment to gather my thoughts?
Yeah, sure, sure.
Thank you. Great. So okay. We were brought in to analyze the opportunity for this acquisition. And based on our analysis, I think it is a good deal to do. Our bar was $150 million in synergies, but with simple calculation, we found that we have an opportunity for $168 million in synergy, which surpasses our standard. And so it's a good deal, and we recommend doing it. For the next steps, we recommend to invest in developing a share and sharing best practice policies. Uh-huh. So in order to realize this synergy and gain this cost saving. And we'll be more than happy to help you with that.
Fantastic. Huh? So,
you don't need to say the last part.
Okay, good. That was the sample walkthrough case. I hope that, you know, clarified a little bit what you should do. Math is important. You saw how I did it. I think it's a good idea to use percentages a lot. Use the information you have. Sometimes you have to guess based on a figure. That's okay to do. Just communicate it, right? Always talk about what you're going to do. And then this works out really well.
Just to answer Jennifer's question, yes, it is always, always recommended to have risk there. This is the recommendation, but it will come with like A, B, C, D as a risk, and then next steps. Good question.
Good.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys. That was really helpful. I'm sure that was a good session for everybody. And you know, I think what's really important to think about is as you're going through all these cases and, you know, practicing this stuff, you should pay attention to, is this something that you enjoy? Because that's a really good indication of this, you know, this is gonna be a job that will match with what you're looking for, you know, post-academia. But that was awesome, guys. Thanks again. I do want to make sure we have about 10 minutes left. And I'm going to fly through the next section on just the applying part, because this is just like my shameless plug. We have a ton of different events happening at Bain in the next few weeks. So I would highly encourage you to get on our website and check out all the different sessions that we're offering. But specifically, one of the opportunities for you to apply to Bain, and I talked about this before, but it's our Advantage Internship Program. And we are doing a full hour dedicated session to the Advantage Program coming up on March 9th. So I believe it's in the evening. I think I want to say it's like 6 or later EST. Don't quote me on that, but it's on the website. So I'd encourage you to look for this session, and we'll get really deep on Advantage in that session. We'll also have some folks that have gone through the Advantage program, both in person and virtually, because last year we did these programs fully virtually and did them with great success. And this year we're actually have the opportunity to plan ahead for those to be virtual. So I think it's gonna be even better this year. But what is Advantage? So if this is the first time you're hearing this word, Advantage is our 1 week internship for ADs. This is an internship program that was designed solely for advanced degree candidates, not offered to anyone that is an MBA or comes from a different background. This is a program completely dedicated for advanced degrees. Interns will experience a full day of, it's a 1 week internship. Sorry, let me back it up. It's a 1 week internship, and it's really focused at, you know, giving you a full immersion into life at Bain and what the career of a consultant really means. It's a full week long. So the first day, probably the first 2 days, you'll be spent doing some training sessions so that we, you know, equip you with everything you need to know to be successful that week. But then the next 3 to 4 days are going to be spent submerged on your case teams. So you will actually get a staffing assignment at the very beginning of the week based on conversations we've had with you about what types of cases could interest you, what you're looking to get out of the internship experience. So you'll get a staffing assignment just like any of our consultants would get. And you join a real Bain case team for that full week. So we're the only top firm to offer a program like this. So I think a lot of our competitors will offer things that are more of a simulation. I think it's really important to highlight that this is real Bain work. And so it's a really unique opportunity to step into this job for a week, learn about Bain. You'll meet tons of folks. I mean, it's not just casework that week. It's a lot of fun too. So this is really a great opportunity that we want all of you on the phone to take advantage of. This cycle, the internship program week is going to be May 17th to 21st. Most of our North American offices are hosting an Advantage program, and then also our Asia Pacific and Australia offices and our Mexico City offices are offering programs for the first time this year. So really exciting to see the program growing. There are case interviews required for being admitted to the Advantage program. So I think it's really timely that we kind of gave this session, and we'll be offering more case interview sessions moving forward. So pay attention to the Bain Careers website, but it is really important for anyone that's thinking about Advantage to get cracking on cases, because it's those will be coming up. Those interviews happen the very last week of April. I didn't mention this yet, but the best part about Advantage is once you get into the program and you intern with us for a week, you have early expedited final round interviews at the very end of that week. So you could walk away from this internship experience with a full-time offer to join us, to return the next year. So usually, typically those offers are extended to return the following year. So at the end of the week, you could be walking into June with an offer to start at Bain next year. That's what happened for Amir and Nick. It's a great path to Bain. I think they'd both attest to that. But that's Advantage. The deadline is coming up in a few weeks, March 21st. Again, we'll get more deep into this, but if it's something you're interested in, check out our interview, webinar on March 9th. Let me just look at the thing really quick to see if I can answer any of these. Advantage is only offered once a year. So unfortunately, if you can't join in May, our recommendation would be to go ahead and apply to the next process, which is what I'm going to talk about here in a second. But our full-time consultant hiring process, this happens annually. So if you're not available for Advantage, this will be your best next opportunity. And the other question about, can successful candidates in Advantage start earlier than 2022? The answer is maybe. Most of our hiring, Bain does the bulk of our hiring a year in advance. So last year we hired all of our folks that started that will be starting this year in 2021. So the bulk of our interns for Advantage will be targeting a 2022 start date. There will be certain situations where there may be an office that has, an incremental hiring need that they would need to fill for the class of 2021. But I would say, flexibility is important. So I would say go into this assuming that you may not be able to start until 2022 start dates. And then the next process. So if you get through Advantage, we encourage everyone to apply. It's a very competitive program. So if you don't get traction in that process, we always have this next formal application process, which is for our full-time consultant positions. Again, the hiring we're doing this year is for folks that want to start in the class of 2022. All of our advanced degrees, before they start full-time at Bain, you'll get a full training program. And this has been, created by former advanced degrees that are, what were some of those things that they needed before they started to feel successful and to feel like they could hit the ground running when they joined their teams. So we have a two-week training program. All ADs will go through that before you start full-time. All offices globally will be looking at applications during this process. So whether you're interested in the Beijing office, the Los Angeles office, the Toronto office, this is the deadline that you need to know about to mark your calendar. This is the application deadline that when you should plan to apply. All of our offices will review those. applications that are submitted, and then we'll be anticipating interviews happening July through October. Timing varies a little bit with offices, but typically it's two rounds of interviews, case and experience interviews. Great. I think that's it. So let's transition to Q&A. So we'll spend, I don't know, we've got a little bit of time left. What time are we at? What time is it?
We have
4 minutes. Okay. Yeah,
that's okay. I think you can extend it for a couple of more minutes.
Okay, sure thing. So, everyone, if you could at this point, I mean, honestly, there's not that, I don't know, there's 32. I want to say come off mute because I want to hear from all of you, but I am nervous that that will create a bunch of people talking at once. So maybe if we could at least start, submit questions you have in the chat, and we will, we'll all tackle those. Amir and Nick, help me out. Call out ones that you see that we should address.
Ida, do you want to go ahead and ask your question?
Sure. Can you hear me? I'm having a few internet difficulties, but assuming you can, I was wondering if dual master's degree students are eligible for the Advantage program. So if you're an MBA plus another master's degree or two other master's degrees, just curious.
Yeah, it's a good question. So I can answer this one. If an MBA is part of your dual degree, our recommendation is always to go through the MBA process to follow along with the MBA timeline that's available at your school. Our advanced degree process, we really try to focus solely on solely advanced degree candidates. MBAs just have such a robust process, and that happens in the fall. So our recommendation would be to follow along with that process and recruit along with the MBAs. Good question.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So what are the requirements to be considered an experienced hire, which typically is done on a rolling basis, from what I understand?
Yes. So if you have years of work experience, I'm assuming that's what you mean, before your, you know, advanced degree, is that correct? Yeah. So if, you know, it depends. I'll be totally transparent that Bain doesn't do a ton of hiring at more tenured levels. And I think that's really because we do really like to kind of grow the firm from within and do as much promotion internally as possible. So there will be times where we'll hire folks in at more of a tenured level. So a tenured consultant or a senior manager level where you're managing teams. It really all comes down to what your, you know, prior work experience is and what level we think will fit best for you to be the best entry point. The process our team is running is for entry level consultant. So Advantage, you know, all of these, basically everything I just ran through, it would be for folks that would be stepping into an entry level consultant position, which is the same position as what an MBA graduate would step into. I'm happy if you want to shoot me a note, Jennifer, afterwards about with your resume, I could make a recommendation. But the other part of that too is, and I'll just finish that really quick, is that, you know, if you do come in at the entry level consultant role and you're, you know, there's a skill tracker, and Amir and Nick can elaborate on this if we need to, but there's a skill tracker that kind of says that every sort of 6 month increment during your time at Bain, you should be able to master these skills, and that'll kind of keep you on track. You have full visibility into that. So you know at any given time what you're kind of working on and what skills you're trying to master. So if you have experience and you're just like ticking through that skill tracker, there's an opportunity for an accelerated, tenure for you to move quicker through the different positions and kind of excel that way. So just one other thing.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
There was a question about, is regular master degree, master in engineering, considered an AD? Can you elaborate on master versus PhD and above?
Yes. So master's degree candidates are welcome to apply through the Advantage through the AD process. The distinction is that we would like you to at least have 3 years of relevant prior work experience. So if you went straight from your bachelor's into your master's, the advanced degree process is not a good fit. We're looking for folks that have had a little bit more experience in addition to that master's degree. So similar to like the MBAs, most MBAs have gone and gotten a few years of work experience before returning to get their MBA. It would be the same requirement for a master's candidate, but they're welcome to apply through the advanced degree process, and that's where they should apply. question. I'm going to go one to Anthony because he put this in here. If you get an offer, how flexible is the start date in 2022? I might just need a little bit more clarity on that. I can at least answer from a perspective of, we understand, especially for PhDs, that like your timeline is not always super crystal clear, and things may get delayed, and you can't always like know exactly when you're going to be wrapping up. So I can at least tell you that if Bain extends an offer to you, we would never take that offer back. We will work with you until you can, you know, to find a time when you can start. But I think if you are really unsure, that if you think that 2022 is like a real far stretch that you probably wouldn't be able to start in any of our 2022 start dates, I'd recommend recruiting the next year. Did that answer your question, Anthony? Come off if it didn't. And if not, I'll just expect that answered the question.
Yes, that answers my question.
Okay.
So I'm actually applying to fellowships in 1 year fellowships in pharma, because okay. What potentially my plan would be to do a 1 year internship and then to bridge the gap between when I graduate in May and yeah. next year, and then use that background and apply to be working after that 1 year internship in consulting.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, do we have?
We can take it offline. Send me an email. Yeah, we can talk about what the best strategy is for that, because we don't, yeah.
Yeah, so there's one more question about on-campus internships for MS student. As an immigrant, I cannot work off-campus for 1 year from the date of entering the USA. Is there a solution for that?
Hold on, sorry, where is it? Let me make sure. I want to make sure I'm answering the correct question.
I think the link.
On-campus internship, summer break. So our internships are pretty set. The Advantage internship that I spoke about will happen in May. We don't do it at a different time of the year, so summer wouldn't be an option. We do have summer internship programs. That's called our summer associate internship program, but we've already hired the summer associate class of 2021. So unfortunately we won't have anything to offer that would fall in this summer at this point. Does that answer the question?
Yeah. I guess
one last question. They might have left. Bo Lee, are you still here? They were wondering if they're interested in a different office, such as Toronto. Are there any channels to connect with those recruiters or people that work there?
Yeah. So, I mean, I did see that question from Bo. Hopefully, he attended our session last night. We did a meet the offices session. Toronto and Chicago were featured last night. Tonight we are doing the West Coast offices. So we have LA, the Bay Area, and Seattle are up tonight. So if any of you are planning to join that, I'll see you there. If he wants to reach out, we don't have beyond that Toronto session, we don't have another one planned before the application deadline. If he wants to reach out, I can connect him with someone there. I'm going to have a lot of connecting to make after this, but we'll do our best. Let's take one more question. Then I actually do have to bounce, but let's maybe ask, is there any questions, guys, about the case interview process itself or anything that Nick and Amir went through, that aren't recruiting related? I can answer all recruiting related questions after the session. We have an AD recruiting@bain.com. I'll send that in the chat. It's an inbox that my entire team answers. So specific questions about, you know, your recruiting situation, please shoot those there and we can answer them. But any questions about the case interview?
Yeah. So regarding case, I think I saw a question about why debt wasn't considered in the synergies. It could be possible that Snacktastic has a mountain of debt, and would it be a good idea to go ahead and do the acquisition?
Yeah, I can talk to that. I mean, it's a good point, right? There's a lot of things we didn't consider. Talking about debt in particular, what I would say is it's probably not the number one focus. And the reason is that I would not consider debt a quick win synergy, right? With debt, you always have some flexibility, number one. And number two, I think just think about it in a recruiting point of view, right? In such an example, you wouldn't be called as a team to help out on such a deal if there is a clear red flag, which is depth. So although it's an important point to consider, you would probably not work on this. You know, it's a yes or no. I think a depth is very, very easy to work on, and it's very easy to rule it out. And that's why I wouldn't bring it up in the framework as a number one topic. Writing it in your framework as something to look at, very good idea. I definitely agree.
Yeah. So this is another question that I think I can ask on behalf of others, is that when you look at ingredients and other things, so my mind immediately goes into the nitty-gritties and also like, how do I know whether potato can replace wheat and all these things, right? So how do you, when you look at those questions in your mind, so there are plenty of questions, but you don't want to ask all of them, right? You want to ask the macro level bird's eye view questions that help you guide through the decision making. So how do you make a decision in that? Like what questions to ask and what not? Can I have a thought from Amir and Nick on this?
Yeah, Amir, why don't you start?
Why don't you, since you did the case.
Okay, good. So I can say what I would do. I mean, you're right, right? But you cannot know everything, and you don't have to. I think you have to find a good mix of, just think about it from your point of view, right? What do you think? Let's say you make a bag of chips and they use corn and the other company uses potatoes. Is it easy to quickly substitute that? I would say probably not, right? That's something where you have to really look in the product, and that's going to take some time. Right. But if Snacktastic buys potatoes, let's take the other ingredient that they share. I forgot what it was. But let's use bottles, right? Let's use bottles. If Snacktastic is a 2 billion company and they can, you know, they buy bottles at a certain price, and the other company is 10 billion and they buy the same bottles at a lower price because they buy more, that's economies of scale. That always works, right? So it's a fair assumption. Without knowing anything, just assume it, right? If you're wrong, the interviewer will say, you know, actually it's a good idea, but in this case, the bottles that Snacktastic uses are aluminium, right? And Tasty Treats does glass. So unfortunately it's not working, but it's a good idea, right? So these cases don't try to trick you or anything, right? Mm-hmm. It's very obvious usually. And if you call out something obvious and it's not right, it's not a big deal. You don't get bad judgment or a minus point for that, right? What it would just be that in this particular case, you're looking at something else, but there's not a trick or anything in these things. I mean, it's usually common sense, and I've found that to be applicable in all these cases.
Okay. All right. I think we are running out of time. I don't think we have more questions, but I mean, guys.
Last question might be just, is there anywhere to obtain Bain practice cases? Nope.
We don't give any case books out, unfortunately. So quick answer to that one.
Okay.
You can look on the website though. There's videos. There's
videos for like, yes, that's right.
Really great, like, I think.
Yeah. Materials. Yeah.
Great.
All right. That was a fantastic session. And thanks a lot, guys, for doing this. I think it was pretty comprehensive. And you can imagine everyone is clapping for you. And a big shout out to Abha, who is the president of education in the club. And Matt, who works with me, is also the director of education. So, I mean, we try to do as much as we can so that the members benefit from these kind of conversation. And I hope you good luck. So
thanks, everybody.
Thanks a lot again.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having us.
Any students, look out for more education interviews to keep practicing pacing. Thanks for everyone for coming.
Thanks for having us.